Oh, you're crazy.
Get out of here. You can't even have an opinion right now.
No, here's
what's your reason.
No, Kenny, listen to me. Listen, you can't have an opinion.
I can. And here's why.
Welcome to New Game Plus. You are listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game, and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
Nolan.
And this is episode 153. Mega Man 11 has released worldwide and is being met with positive reviews by critics and fans alike. IGN gave it a 7.5 out of 10, saying, "It's not revolutionary, but Mega Man 11 feels almost like a classic Mega Man game."
Well, that's kind of the idea.
Nintendo Life gave it a 9 out of 10, writing, "Mega Man 11 is an excellent resurgence for the Blue Bomber, imbuing the tried and true classic gameplay with modern touches and new ideas that expand on existing concepts in interesting ways." But screw what the professionals say.
Yeah,
Nolan, we want to know what you have to say. You've been live streaming your experiences with the title over the past few days. What do you think?
Yeah, so I'm at the Wily section towards the end, so I've got like 3 stages left and then a boss fight, I'm sure. And the boss rush, of course. And
overall,
I agree that it's a modern day like resurgence, and it's going to be cool to see them make more after this with the same graphics and mechanics. It's smooth and it feels great, and I think it's really, really good. I think it deserves more than a 7 out of 10.
What about a 7.5 like IGN gave it?
I think it deserves more than a 7.5.
Kenny, have you seen any kind of gameplay or anything?
I have downloaded the demo, but I have forgotten that I did that and didn't open it. But now that you've reminded me, I'm going to go play a little bit and see if it's worth picking up.
You definitely should.
Mega Man 11 is not the only Mega Man in the news. I don't know if you guys heard.
Maybe. Remind me.
Past week, Capcom has officially announced that the live-action Mega Man movie is happening.
I saw that.
No. No New Game Plus.
Do you remember the live-action DBZ movie? Come on.
No.
Yeah.
That made it to theaters?
I mean, no.
Straight to home or something.
Probably. But, we don't need that.
Yeah.
It's so hard to do live-action animated stuff.
I know.
There's no way that's going to be good.
Is it Netflix? Probably.
I don't know. No release date set. I know that. I know that they haven't even begun production, so maybe it will crash before they even get into it.
If it's the right people that do it.
Imagine how much cooler an animated one would be than a live action. And I don't want an animated one, so like, no.
Well, movie's not out yet, not even in production. Mega Man 11, the game, is out. Nolan, are you planning on streaming any more this week? Can anybody like stop in our Twitch channel and watch you possibly rage anymore?
Please. No one's been stopping by. I mean, our regulars, which is awesome. But yeah, I'm going to stream more for sure. Maybe today.
Dude, no one. I've been there 24/7.
I know.
You are our regulars.
You're our regular, and then maybe Ben and a couple of others.
Well, whether we're talking about a little android boy brought to life or the entire Earth and everything in it brought to life, we're talking about resurrection, we're talking about reanimation, we're talking about rebirth and restoration in our retro game of the week, Terranigma.
Overview.
Terranigma was released in 1995 in Japan and 1996 in Europe and Australia. It was not released in the United States.
Wait, what?
Never made it to North America.
But it came out in Europe.
Yeah, I know. That's so usually weird. Backwards.
Yeah, like, there are games for sure that we've even played that have come out in Japan, but haven't been released elsewhere, right? Like
Correct.
Even Seiken Densetsu 3, right? Wasn't that just released over there?
I believe it was only Japan, yes.
But definitely not Europe. And so
Europe always gets things second from us.
Right. I'm so, I wish I knew the story behind it. I don't know if either of you guys like were able to get down to the bottom of it, but why in the world was like it was published in Japan and then Nintendo published it, but for Europe and not for the States? It's so weird.
It's very weird, and I couldn't figure it out.
I think it was a timing thing and like a and sort of a businessy thing. I read something about Enix, like their local whatever they were at the time was kind of closing its doors, and so I don't think there was just a natural like entity to deal with it.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I knew that there were some game consoles that are like area locked or region locked or whatever. I don't know the
PAL
and
NTSC.
So okay, so like wait, are together or
no?
Separate?
NTSC is North America consoles. PAL PAL is Europe, and then Japan consoles are Japan.
So even if we would have been able to buy this game from Europe in 95 or 96, 97, whatever, we would not have been able to play it on our consoles.
I don't know. It's certainly not a Japanese game. They don't fit in NTSC consoles because there's a little notch.
Right.
But I don't know if that's the case for PAL. It might work. I don't know.
Yeah. It may or may not. It may have just been video conversion that you would have had to have done, or you may have actually needed to play
that
different version of the system. I'm not certain.
Well, either way, we missed out.
I mean, on a lighter note, nowadays we don't have region locks on the Switch, so that's cool.
Praise God.
Praise the Lord. Okay, so all that said, we didn't get this in the United States.
What?
there's this thing called PAL, and it's developed by Quintet and published by Enix. If you're feeling like you've heard this before, it's because you have. This game is part of the Soul Blazer trilogy by Quintet. We recently played Illusion of Gaia, which is the second in the series. Terranigma is the third.
Now, they're in the same series, but they're not really connected, I don't think.
No, I mean,
not story-wise, maybe in the same, maybe connected like Final Fantasies are connected or something.
Yeah, but if then my question that. Is, yeah, I think it's more like Final Fantasy. So all you can play Terranigma without having played the other two, just fine. That'll be fine.
Can I just, I want to say something as we're here just at the very beginning before anything accidentally happens.
What's up?
For the sake of our listeners and more so for the sake of me, I don't know how much reading or research or how far you guys got in the game, but please don't spoil anything. I have at least gathered that there are some major story shifts that occur in this game.
And I haven't read those either.
Okay.
Oh, well, I have.
Keep your mouth shut. Seriously.
Kenny, I'll get to why I don't want to be spoiled in later parts of this episode, but I'm just saying from the front, as we're talking about this game, let's preserve our virgin ears.
I love the foreshadowing. Okay. I am kind of in the same boat with you. I did not go too far. I read up to where I am in the story, and I'm not even going to read out that much. I'm just going to lay the background and how the story begins. So, okay. Illusion of Gaia, we played it. There are similarities here in the type of game that it is. It's an action RPG. You play as a boy named Ark, who has never left his village of Krista, that's what it's called, and no one has. You have a group of friends, kind of similar to Illusion of Gaia, and they are being mischievous and want to open this forbidden door that the elder of the town has told them not to. Ark is like, sure. And then they open the door. And I mean, this is just a retelling of Pandora's box in a really cheesy way. You find a box down there in this like cave and you open it and there's a creature inside. That's nice. It's not mean. Its name is Yomi. And it explains to you this mechanic in the game we'll talk about later, but ends up being like after that segment's over, everyone's frozen in the town. Like
except one person.
Except
two people.
You. Right. So that sucks. But then the elder's like not frozen. And he's like, well, leave, go unfreeze everybody. I told you not to. So that's how you begin your journey. You leave your city. And the backstory of how this world is set up is very interesting to me. And the whole story I thought was actually really well done. So Earth is hollowed out, kind of. It's kind of a difficult way to explain it, but you have the surface world and you have the underworld. That's where Ark is from. He's from the underworld. The light side is up top, dark side's inside, God, devil, whatever. The light side surface is about growth. The inside is about decline. And it's these two forces that are constantly like at war with each other. And there was like a war, but nothing really happens. They're just separated. The inside is frozen over and the top side is like underwater now.
And so where like Illusion of Gaia focuses on time and all of those kinds of elements, Terran and Terra, those are both words that have to do with like Earth and stuff. This story revolves around, and that's why the segue was as good as it was, because it revolves around Earth's resurrection. And so Ark is helping to initiate and progress the evolution Earth. Of life. I don't know if this is part of the story. I don't know if it's at the beginning, like creating life, but it doesn't sound like it from what I gather. It's like bringing it back. So it seems like something has happened that has destroyed all those things. And now Ark is reviving the world.
Yes. Yeah. So clearly the story is bigger than that. And there's a lot more to talk about, but I don't know a ton outside of that. Like as far as important events, and I'm with Dustin, I kind of want to keep it that way.
Gameplay.
Nolan mentioned it, but it's worth pointing out this game, very different in story, but very similar in gameplay to Illusion of Gaia. And again, you'll hear us reference that game a lot just because we played it fairly recently, thanks to our patrons for picking that one, right? It was a Patreon pool title. Yeah. Whereas this one just came up on Natural, so fun. But it plays in a really similar way. This is action RPG, so think more Zelda and less Final Fantasy. You're not doing strategic turn-based battles. You're fighting enemies that are, you know, visible and on the screen with you, and running around and crawling through dungeons and, you know, finding weapons and items and sort of some magic, but I feel like that ends up being pretty peripheral here because of the way that they do it.
Yeah, at it least, is pretty limited.
Yeah, at least early in the game, I didn't feel like it was ever very necessary or even pushed as like a big thing. And so that's an interesting choice that they made. But it works with an action RPG because you know, can sort of limit yourself to your normal moves and attacks. And it is welcome that you're able to block projectiles as you're running around in the world, and that as you find different weapons, they kind of interact with different types of enemies differently. And so kind of some of the basic tropes of an action RPG, but feels pretty standard fare for their take on it.
I would say that block mechanic, and then, guys, you can jump.
You can jump.
Do you not realize how insane that is for these kinds of games?
Well, not only that, but like, yeah, so you find out you can jump in the town. It's like, oh, cool, that's nice. But then, like, you get in that first dungeon, and we'll just get into techniques, I guess. Like, so you jump, and then you can do this, like, sick dive move on enemies.
Well,
that
you've
got kind
is super
of a, like
cool.
An in-the-air attack and a, like, on-the-ground attack.
Well, okay, but hold on. Your weapon is not a talking flute. We need to say that.
Oh, very important, yeah.
Your weapon is an incredible BA spear that your initial spear regenerates your life slowly. So like the best of the best, which is also an incredible way to help you learn the game at the beginning.
True.
The first hour you've got a weapon that regenerates your health slowly. It doesn't do it long-term as you continue the game, but that's a nice little buffer to keep you alive in the early
Absolutely.
Stages.
Yeah. I think it's a good way of easing you in.
But with this spear, like you guys are saying, you've got different attacks, and it's based on button inputs. Like,
you
just have your common strike. You have what I do nonstop, and that is you can either double D-pad one direction and dash, or you can hold Y and dash. And if you attack out of that dash, it kind of it gives you some iframes, invincibility frames, so you don't take damage usually, and you can like dive cyclone spear through your enemy. That's my favorite.
That one's so good. The rapid one, like, it's so cool that they took one weapon, they gave it to you at the beginning, and then you have like several things. At times I felt like with the inputs that you're doing, I felt like it was almost like a fighting game in some aspects, which was super welcome to me. Like the double tap on the D-pad is very foreign for RPGs. Like that's not a thing, but it was a thing here and I loved it. I use that tech a lot too.
They really committed to that like action RPG feel, but yeah. in really thoughtful ways.
More so than Illusion of Gaia.
Yeah, you can tell that aspect of the game is one that grew.
For the first hour or so, your mission is relatively limited. Nolan mentioned in kind of building out the story that everyone's frozen. You're supposed to go unfreeze everybody. And so in this world that you're set in, which is it's not a globe and it's not Earth. And it's a very weird overworld map that actually gets, when you go to Earth later, it goes back to like what you would normally see in an overworld map, more like more flat, I guess, or more spherical is what the Earth is.
It's really hard to describe. Yeah.
Yeah. This one is, I know that it's got a specific shape in what they're trying to, a torus. That's what it is.
Torus. Yeah.
It is kind of the shape of the initial Earth and you feel it on the world, but you're going in this overworld to these five different towers in your underworld type thing, making your way through their various levels, defeating the enemies within and defeating the boss or the puzzle at the end of each of these towers. And as you finish the tower, you go into this incredible epic scene where you revive a part of the world, but not a part of that underworld, a part of our world. Like the very first continent that you revive is Eurasia, and then like South America and Australia. And so I was not expecting that.
Yeah. Like I think the story was like meshed into the gameplay really well, because I tend to forget about like what the plot is in these types of games, and it's just like, you know, predictable or whatever. But like as you're progressing, like beating these dungeons, like it reminds you like, oh wait, I'm affecting the world. And I think that's such a cool mechanic, like and also just puts emphasis on the story, which I don't know, coming from Illusion of Gaia, I didn't really want that, but here it's a different story.
I'm a little torn just personally about fictionalized Earth as sort of the best vehicle to do a fictional story in. I get that there's some appeal and familiarity and it automatically makes people like attach and care, but it also just feels more fake to me because it's not. And so this is totally personal preference, but if you're doing fantasy, even if you want to do like creation and destruction of the world, I wish you would just maybe echo and imply some similarities, but kind of do your own thing. You know, like the moment where we actually walk into a space and it's called Colorado. I was like, come on.
No, see, I would normally agree with you. I don't know if it was I was already smitten by that time or if
yes.
I don't know, the slow reveal, I don't know. I think it could work, especially because I don't know when this is. I don't know. So like it's not like I'm expecting to walk into Colorado and see there's the Rockies
they're not trying to make it like super uber modern real. And a direct, right. You know, but it's still, for me, it just kind of, I know it's supposed to serve to like make you feel more familiar and attached, but for me, it kind of detaches me. I have a harder time suspending disbelief in that case. But again, that's just total personal preference. I agree that they do a good job of setting it up, and it's a fun story that, you know, has a lot of places to go. The reveals do feel a little old to me.
Kenny?
They got long. It's like the same thing each continent. And like, I'm not talking spoilers. I'm just talking like the cutscenes. And there were moments, and we talked about Illusion of Gaia too. They took their time kind of throwing in this elaborate world they built, and sometimes a little too much. But again, that's just a small beef, really.
We talked about how this game is similar to Illusion of Gaia in mechanics. I think it'd be important to point out how it's not. So in Illusion of Gaia, you had to like, the puzzles were great and they did that really well, but it was kind of centered around this like mechanic where you find what's his name, like you transform into another person and then you get different abilities.
Fabio?
And then Fabio, long hair Fabio. You get his abilities and then you can handle the rooms that you previously couldn't navigate with his mechanics. You don't do that in this game, but I still felt like the puzzles were, I mean, they're definitely not as crazy as Illusion of Gaia, but I didn't feel like I was missing them too much. Like the combat was so well done that I was like enjoying just fighting.
I totally missed them, but I thought that was my favorite thing about Illusion of Gaia. Seamlessly they did the puzzles and how really well thought out they were. And here there were a few little like things to navigate in dungeons, but I didn't ever feel like you got a proper puzzle. I mean, there's elements of that still, but it certainly isn't where they sort of focus their gameplay. And I don't mind that at all, but I missed out how well Illusion of Gaia did do that.
And I agree with you. I think that's probably one of the things that Illusion of Gaia did better. Zelda obviously does better. Yeah. That's like what that's about. I don't think this game, first and foremost, is trying to do puzzles. I think it's puzzle light and it's story dense. I think more than, like you mentioned earlier, Nolan, even in my beloved Final Fantasy games, I get lost in what's happening in the story, in part because of all the side quests, right? So like I'm in the story for an hour and then I'm in side quest world for like 5 hours and then I come back to the story. So that's part of it. But in this game, everything you're doing is complementing the story. Everything that you're doing is building on the building blocks of what just happened and what is going to happen. And so like I'm steep in this world, and I've said it so many times before, but like story and characters are the things that I enjoy most, the elements that I enjoy most. And in this, I don't know if we've played a video game, a retro game, where it's as steeped in story as this one. And it's just something that was charming to me.
I was kind of surprised at how much I cared about the story here, because again, coming from a game that I did not like the story, this one was very involved. The translation was good, because I mean, it came out in English overseas. So like I there weren't like weird unfamiliar words or something, so it actually made sense. Yeah, I'm with you. Another thing I really wanted to talk about while we're on gameplay is, we briefly mentioned it, but the magic system. I'm a huge fan of the Magirock system and how they did magic. Yeah, I like it. So you find these Magirocks that are just these giant crystals on the ground that you can pick up, and then it's like, oh, you got a Magirock. Okay, cool. Then you're going to go to a shop. So in your hometown, there's a Magirock dude, like a store you go in. That has really cool music, by the way. And you talk to him, and you can charge those Magirocks and get spells from them. That's your spells. So you don't like learn spells and then permanently have them. It's more like you use an item that is a spell, and then it's a one-time use, and then it's gone. It turns into a Magirock again. You get that back, and then you can go load that up again when you get to town. I think it's a great way to balance magic to make it not too strong and kind of still let the physical abilities that Ark has, like, put those on the spotlight.
Yeah, no, I think it works. I think it is weird. It's very uncommon, right? Having to find those Magirocks, and then you can use... They're kind of like vials, right? Like magic vials. And so like you can fill them up kind of, and then they recharge, and you find these different stores around the different worlds that you go to, different places you go to. It's very unique. I'll tell you this. I've played probably 2.5-3 hours. Probably more than that, 4 hours. But I have purchased magic spells and used some of my Magirocks, and I haven't used any spell yet.
It's certainly like not a damaging necessary. One. At least as far as we've gone.
I haven't used one to heal. I haven't used one to damage. Oh. I've only done physical attacks because I'm so weird like that. And if I spend money on it, and if it's limited, then I'm only going to use it when I must. And so,
I mean, but that just shows you like they're okay with you playing that way. Like it's not mandatory, which is another perk for me. I don't like mandatory mechanics. So I just liked the way they did that. I thought it was really unique and fun.
It felt like a little bit of a hassle for me going out of your way and having to like recharge it only in town. I get that it's a great balance, and I do think it works okay for that. But I tended to fall into Dustin's camp just because of the hassle of it. And I wish it was more, I don't know, limited, but like you could... you can put it on, you know, on a on mana and only recharge that in town if you wanted, and you've still got it and it's there and ready to use. And I don't know. It's not bad, and it works for this game, but it just wasn't my favorite magic system.
Okay, so this game does a few things different. The magic system is one of them. The other thing that's pretty different from Illusion of Gaia or Legend of Zelda, we've been comparing it a lot to those, is that in this one, the RPG side of things, the way that you... So you have levels that you gain based on experience from fighting mm-hmm. enemies. And when you every level you get strength up, defense up, health up, those kinds of things. But what's key here that you don't have in the other games is that grinding can actually be a part of the game, because enemies respawn if you leave and re-enter. And you're going to notice that when you go into areas that are a little bit tougher than you, if you just stick it out and get that next level, you'll feel that difference. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there's a game in recent years that I played, recently that you get that feeling from just one level to the next of improvement there. I thought that was really cool, because so like Final Fantasies, I would stay in an area and grind for a little bit when I knew an enemy was giving me some significant experience.
Yeah, yeah. I felt not only the level differences, but the item differences like pretty immediately, which is really welcome in my mind. You want to know that the stuff you're doing, either taking time to stay, you know, either up to speed or over leveled, or, you know, investing this extra time in building your experience, or making sure that you're buying the most recent item or going out of your way to find what you need for that dungeon. It's good that those things feel rewarding and like there's a need. You know, if you fall behind, like, the game certainly gets more difficult.
Yeah.
One thing that I really liked about this game, gameplay-wise, that we haven't mentioned, but is Yomi's little box. We've mentioned it in passing, but not kind of how it works.
Yeah, Nolan, you freaked out about this. You did a first play.
This is my favorite thing.
Oh, I think it was my favorite thing about this entire game. Yeah. Like, Yomi's little box. This kind of game, especially, are so bad about menuing and how artificial that feels. And they just sort of wrap all of the functionality of that into kind of, A, the story, and into a graphical user face that makes sense for the story. And your character is able to kind of enter this little box that he's given early in the game, where his items are kept and where his information is, and kind of all of the stuff that sometimes is onerous about these games. The reading up on how things work if you don't know. All of that is kind of really well placed inside of this little box that you just have with you. And, oh man, I was so impressed with that choice.
Yeah. Quintet, for some reason, has this obsession with unique menus, because Illusion of Gaia did that too. And I got to give them the props. I liked the menu in that game too. But this one, it's like a clubhouse. You hit start and you go into this box that has separate rooms, and you use Yomi as your cursor. So I thought you were going to have to walk through it at first, because you do walk when
which
you're introduced to it, which would have been slow and kind of burdensome for sure.
Yeah.
Yomi is your cursor, which is great. And like, oh my goodness, it's so charming. I loved that so much. It was so good.
Aged.
So I'll say it, and then you can disagree if you want to.
Okay.
Every single piece of music in this game is fantastic.
Oh, all of them,
I fully
for real.
Disagree.
Oh, you're crazy.
Get out of here. You can't
Kenny,
even have an opinion
you
right
can't.
Now.
No,
here's
what
you
reason.
Me,
no, Kenny, listen
myself.
To me. Listen, you can't have an opinion.
I can.
That's
and
a
here's
bad,
why.
That's a wrong opinion for sure.
You
what
know,
are you talking
let,
about?
Let me tell you why I disagree.
No, okay. Kenny, this music is some of the best comparable, yes, to Final Fantasy and some of the other classics that have some of the best music. This
oh,
is up
I'd
there.
Say top 10 SNES. Oh, I'm serious.
I'll agree with both of those statements. The problem for me
God,
is that you
dumb.
Said every single track was amazing.
Every single one.
And fully, and that they were perfect. And what? Though 99% of this game I loved the music on, Yomi's stupid little song every time she comes up was the worst thing that has ever happened to me.
No,
and I
wasn't.
Hated it. It didn't
it
fit the character. It was cheesy. It was heavy-handed. It made me like literally uncomfortable in my skin. Well made, sure. All the rest of the songs, absolutely stellar. Absolutely. But that song I did not
okay,
like.
Goodness. Okay, first of all, is Yomi a she?
No.
I don't know. I assume.
Is Yomi a he?
Mine wasn't.
I don't know.
What?
No, he's not a he
Mine
either.
Wasn't.
It's just Yomi. It's just the little
Jenny's might have been.
Jenny's was a she. Well,
mine was gender neutral.
I mean, I still don't want to, whatever. You can have your opinions, even if they're wrong, or if it's just one song, I might even merit you that. But there were so many pieces of music here that were not only... We've played games that have good soundtracks, but that are not memorable, that they don't stick yep. with you, and yeah. they don't like bring up emotions or feelings. And this soundtrack is done so well that in all of the different areas, they give you emotion. I mean, they move you to some degree, as silly as that sounds. And they're yeah. so applicable to the moment of what's going on, because a lot of things that you're doing are epic, but even when they're not doing epic, you've got music that's not near as epic, but it's still
atmospheric,
beautiful, yeah. atmospheric, powerful, wonderful.
Yeah. So this is one of those games when the music came out that they released some like live orchestration versions
oh, really?
Of. And usually when that happens, it's because people have gone,
yes,
holy cow, this is good. It's worth us like giving it the full quote unquote real. I mean, video game music is real in my mind, but you know, the real treatment. And
right.
again, that's not always the case. Sometimes it's just like money grab popularity or whatever. But in this case, it certainly merited it. And yeah.
What about graphics? Do we think that they were also top 10 SNES or average? What do you guys think?
I loved them.
Yeah. I mean,
a lot. There were some things about this game I didn't love, but the graphics were not that thing. They tried a little too hard on some of the cutscene stuff, I thought.
Really?
I thought so.
No. I disagree.
I don't know. Like I'm saying a little too hard. It's not like it was game breaking for me. And
well,
and though it fits, the overworld in the underworld was highly uncomfortable for me and felt forced. I get why they did
it. Mode 7?
Yeah. It was just strange. But besides that, everything was bright and pretty, and textures and layers and depth and background and foreground and unique.
Well, hold on. Listen, though.
I loved it.
The room when you beat the towers...
I think that's so epic and beautiful. And
guys, room.
Yeah, I agree with you, Kenny, that some of them take long. And there's a couple times where I tried to mash the button just because I'd seen it already. Right. But what I'm watching is not something I have to suffer through. It's beautiful. That scene that you're talking about, Nolan, is one of the coolest. You get it five times.
It's amazing.
In the first hour.
That.
And not only is it beautiful, that's when the music is epic too. It's just... Everything looks and sounds and feels exactly how they wanted it to look and sound and feel.
It can, you know, it kind of feels ahead of its time in that way, because I think of PlayStation era, PlayStation 2 RPGs like Final Fantasies that pulled you in with the sounds and the looks. And I can't, like, Chrono Trigger maybe is the only SNES game I could say that about. And that was definitely ahead of its time. I think this game is in the same vein where, like, I didn't think any of this was corny. That's a big deal for a JRPG.
Yeah, saying something when it has the kind of scope of story and the things it tries to do. Yeah.
And we can't understate that. That is saying so much. Because yeah, these
like
games...
in the dialogue, too.
These games hinge on the corny factor. Like, and from the first moment to the last moment that I've been able to play so far, I don't get corny. Like, I get... epic. And a lot of this, like, okay, so you may have not gotten there yet, but there are so many feels when you rescue a tree that finally brings growth back to the world.
That's
and
a good moment.
Before yeah. then, you've got a barren red wasteland. It's lava filled. There's nothing. And then it's got this whole cutscene after you beat a monster and revive this tree where you've got this single flower that grows and then it dies. But one seed is picked up by the wind and carried out over the land as the camera pans around. I know. As the camera pans around the seed, you start to see the red soil turn into green grass.
My goodness.
Way that they do that visually, the way they do that musically, that's just one example of many of how so many of these set pieces just fall into place and work, in my opinion, so flawlessly.
Here's my concern about their storytelling. And it's I don't know if it's valid or not because I haven't gotten all the way through the game. I am afraid they got so big and epic early that to continue epic thematic growth, it's going to have to get a little bit ridiculous. And that's some of what we knocked on Illusion of Gaia was how ridiculous it was. And I'm afraid it's going to go there. I wish they'd taken a little bit more time to do some character development. Like, you are thrown straight into, like, hey, you're nobody, to, like, hey, all of a sudden, because you opened a door, you are suddenly resurrecting the Earth. And I wish they had, like, spread that story out. And, you know,
yes,
I feel like the story we're in, I want to be almost the climax. Not quite, you know, give something there. But it's early, and that scares me because I don't know what they're going to do with it.
Right. And I agree with you, but I feel like there's something more going on.
There may deliver in a good way.
Even how they set it up is your Ark and the people in his village, that's the only village on that underworld. Like, so he's already special. There's something different. There's something here going on. I'm just holding on to that. Sure, this could crash and burn, but that's not going to take away how beautiful the graphics, the sprites, the animations, the soundtrack is. So because all of those things are done so well, I've got to believe that the story has been done well as well.
Okay, one more thing while we're in aged, because this is totally an aged issue, and I'm not just going back and doing something I forgot to talk about in gameplay. I'm really not.
you are, though, if you preface it that way.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I'm totally not. The design of your bosses for an action RPG are so timeless.
They age really well.
They age really well because they were done so well. They've aged well. That's all I'm going to say about
They're
that.
They're unique. The way that you fight them is unique.
Yeah.
Their patterns are unique. They are difficult, but once you learn how to fight them, you succeed.
Ahead of its time. 96.
By reputation, and I don't think you guys got there, but there's supposedly one boss that's super, super brutal that a lot of people whine about as being too hard, like literally interrupting kind of the natural flow of the game and feeling good, like punishingly difficult.
Like some vampire girl or something?
Yeah.
Later on,
she's called Bloody Mary. I'm sure you'll get there. I didn't get far enough to actually experience that, but that is a kind of noted hiccup by people, is the one sort of exception. But I'd rather a game air too difficult than too easy.
Yes, me too.
And so overall, I think they did that piece just really, really well.
Final thoughts.
At the end of each and every one of our episodes, we determine whether or not this game gets our vote for New Game Plus status, which is our general thumbs up or thumbs down. Requires 2/3 of the vote to swing one way or the other. I don't know if we're going to have, if we need to go in a certain order here. I'll just start because I think it's obvious for me at least. I have not enjoyed a retro video game as much as I enjoyed Terranigma in a long time. I know. I wasn't expecting this. There's been a few standouts in this last year or so of this podcast, right? So, like, Chrono Cross was awesome, but it's PlayStation. It was great. Diablo, I had a lot of fun with. Probably out of all the games, though, Seiken Densetsu 3 took us all by surprise, took the cake, and is always going to be in, like, the top three of the games that we played for me. Mm-hmm. But there was something about Terranigma that just did it. It does some things better than Seiken Densetsu 3. It doesn't have as much, like, it doesn't have where I can pick any of those characters from the start. It doesn't have some of those other unique characteristics that Seiken Densetsu 3 has. But Terranigma has some unique things of its own that, although it might not be my favorite one that we played, it's one of the best, in my opinion. We've mentioned all the reasons why it's good. I'm so wrapped up in the story. I can't wait to see what happens. I have no idea what to expect for any twists or turns that I know are going to be there. And so I really hope that I can find the time to continue to play this game, because it most certainly receives my vote for New Game Plus.
Kenny, why don't you go next?
I don't think I'm as resoundingly a fan as Dustin is. I think this is a very good game, and I'll go ahead and just say it. It gets New Game plus status for me. I think it'd be crazy not to do that. It does some things, and again, just comparison, does some things a lot better than Illusion of Gaia, including story being at least palatable. Like, Illusion of Gaia was just ridiculous. But I still liked Illusion of Gaia better as just reference. Like, the puzzles for me were fun, and the character swapping, and they both have charm, just a different kind of charm. But they're both good games, and this one certainly deserves New Game Plus status. I would love to never hear Yomi's Little Song again, but if I could get a version of the game that edited that out, I'd be a happy camper.
And to me, if all three of us didn't say yes, it wouldn't get it, because this deserves a New Game Plus plus a resounding yes, because this game is, I think I'm with Dustin in that it's like seriously top three for me on the podcast. It's almost like a different development team made this one from Illusion of Gaia.
Help me, Nolan, because better or worse for you? I know where Dustin is, but better or worse for you than Chrono Trigger?
Than Chrono Trigger?
Uh-huh.
No. Interesting. To me, they're so different, though.
Oh, like, they're completely
to
different.
To me, well, they're JRPGs, but like, they are different.
I think you can compare, though. Like, I think that was a good question. That was an interesting question.
Yeah, because I know, like, Dustin didn't like Chrono Trigger as much as us, and he says this is, like, top three. I just wanted some kind of perspective
reference,
as, like,
yeah,
where we are in our scope, you know?
Yeah, okay, so if I had to choose between the two, which I hate those kinds of questions,
oh, yeah,
I would choose
totally
Chrono Trigger.
Unfair.
But, like, don't let that distract you. I think this game is a 10 out of 10 and amazing.
Yeah,
I think everyone should play it. The opening cutscene where, like, it's, like, panning across the, you know, it's setting the stage and it's panning across the scenery with a clock ticking and it goes slowly across the screen. The last one, the hands fall off and then a 13 appears and you're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And that pulled me in from that moment. Like, come on.
Okay, so that's interesting because I was watching your first play. You were really enjoying it. So it was, you had recorded your first play. You sent it to me. You said, Dustin, have you played this game yet? And yeah, then you're like, just watch my first play. I didn't know if you absolutely hated it and it was terrible,
right,
or if you absolutely loved it. And so I watched it and it was so fun to see your excitement and enjoyment grow even as you're playing. Then I was so interested this week to hear if that continued. And it sounds like it did.
Easily.
Yeah.
Easily. That's the thing. Start strong and stay strong. And I don't know what it is, but I do know there's some big plot thing that happens soon. I'm going to keep playing this game.
Kenny, do you really know what happens?
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Like, I didn't play that far in the game, but I don't mind
I know
spoiling.
I know you do your research, so.
Oh, man.
Well, Terranigma does receive our vote for New Game Plus Plus status.
Yes.
It is certified.
One plus.
What did you think? We got one message from Nick this week. He said, Terranigma. Such a shame that we never got this game stateside. But hooray for emulation, allowing us to enjoy the title. I finished playing Soul Blazer recently and have started playing Illusion of Gaia on my YouTube channel. And when that is finished, I'll be moving on to this game, and I'm very much looking forward to it. The themes and stories of these games are so good. Terranigma is definitely one of the best games the SNES has to offer. If only we were offered it when it was released. Sad face.
Man. Such a weird choice, right?
Because
we did get Illusion of Gaia, right?
We did get Illusion of Gaia, yeah. Actually, that's such a sad thing, actually, because I had not heard of this game, maybe just because I'm ill-informed.
No,
but
I hadn't either, ever.
But yes, one of the best games the SNES has to offer, and yet many people are going to have completely missed out. I think that is a travesty.
Sucks. Quintet, man, what happened? So weird.
Thank you, Nick, for writing in. If you can get to the bottom of this quintet thing and try to reverse that, we'd greatly appreciate that.
Yeah.
Each and every week, you can send in your thoughts on the Retro Game of the Week. Play along with us. Send us your thoughts to ngppodcast@gmail.com. We'll include your commentary as a part of the show, or just to hop in our Discord, and there's a whole commentary channel for you to submit your thoughts there as well. For now, we're just going to set Terranigma lightly to the side because we're coming back to it, but we are going to randomly select the next retro video game that we're going to be playing for the next 7 days. We've got an expansive retro master list that you guys have been adding to almost daily. We can't even keep up. There are hundreds of games in there, any console, any genre, 15 years old or older, and from there, we are going to find out what our next game is. All right, we're playing a 1993 video game based on a 1992 film of the same name.
No. Come on now.
Under the Sea. That's right, we're playing Disney's Aladdin.
Wait. Oh my gosh, I was like, there's a Little Mermaids game?
Yeah, you totally
picked this game. It's for Sega, I think, and I think I had it, and it's good.
Yeah, I didn't even give any details. I just wanted to sing one of the songs. There is an Aladdin song that we know, right? On a magic carpet ride under the sea.
Oh, my gosh. No.
The worst person.
It's...
Yeah, so...
I just can't wait to be genie.
Aladdin.
Okay.
The genie. Prince. Listen, it came out on Genesis, and it came out on the SNES? NES? NES.
SNES, I think, right?
Yes. Yeah. It was... Yes. It came out on both of those.
SNES.
And wow, I do think that they are comparable, but one has an additional stage. No, they're actually...
Genesis one.
They're comparable, but one of them, you have a weapon. I believe it's the Genesis one. I don't think you have a weapon in the Super Nintendo one.
Then that's not comparable at all.
But it's the same stages. And it's very weird. We'll have to look into it.
We'll look at some differences.
We'll probably take a gander at both versions this week. But play along with us. Disney's Aladdin.
Join us in our Discord server as we continue to talk about Terranigma this week. You can go to our Twitter and you can click on the Discord invite link in our bio to join us there. See you then.
Special thanks to all of you who support us on patreon.com. Our patrons are some of our favorite people in the whole world, and we especially want to give a big shout out to our producer level supporters, Zion, Phil, and Gimberino. You guys are great.
You can always find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Twitch at NGP Podcast. Stop by our Twitch this week. Nolan will be streaming some more Mega Man 11,
yes,
if you're lucky. You can go to our YouTube channel at New Game Plus Podcast. Listen to us directly on any podcast provider of your choice. Make sure you subscribe so that you're the first to get new NGP episodes. And while you're at it, leave a kind rating and review. As always, we want to thank Tom Tate for editing and producing each and every one of our episodes. Join us next week as we play Disney's Aladdin. Until then, I'm still Dustin.
I'm Kenny.
It's your boy Yomi.
And Terranigma is one of the best games. 100% of the sound and the music is on point.
False.
And this has been New Game Plus.